All right, you ready for this morning? It's good to see you all. It's good to have you here. And I want to start with this. This is a statement that I read yesterday that really deeply resonated with me. Sometimes you read something and you're like, oh, that's exactly what I attempt to create anytime I'm with a group of people or doing a circle or meeting with somebody one-on-one. And here's the statement. I want you to hear this and read it. Only when compassion is present will people allow themselves to see the truth. Sit with that for just a moment. I know you walk into these spaces, and some of you walk into church with your guard up, and you're like, man, I'm going to give this one more shot. I'm going to try to walk into this space and see if there's anything that people might have to give or to receive or experience. I know that when you come into a space like this, sometimes it can be difficult, and sometimes you realize that you've got work to do. So I, first of all, want to applaud you for being here, and to applaud you families for bringing your kids into these spaces, because these spaces matter. And so I want to take this seriously this morning and offer up my own heart of compassion to you, that when compassion is present, then and only then will people be feeling free to allow themselves to see the truth. Because if we bring our guard up and we're not ready, it's really difficult to see things inside of us. So we're gonna, just for a moment, just inviting Christ into this space to bring us more clarity, more curiosity, more compassion, so that we're ready to receive everything that he has for us, okay? So let's just relax into this moment. We're here, everything's gonna be okay. You're safe. And I wanna share some things with you that have been on my heart that Quincy and I have actually worked on together. So I wanna give props to my man over there for the ways in which we've worked through some things together this week to offer up to you. Now, very often when I get up here, I will say to you that one of my objectives and one of my primary objectives is always to help people move towards healing. And when I say healing, I don't mean curing, because you can be healed and not cured, and you can be cured and not healed. I'm not here to fix you, but I'm here to move you one step closer to healing. And for me, healing is about integration. It's about an integration of all of your various parts and your stories and things going on in your life, your pains, your sorrows, and your joys, and somehow learning how to integrate that back into you so that you fully align and snap back into place. And this morning, we're going to step into a new journey. For the next 4 weeks, we're going to be looking at a biblical concept referred to as biblical idolatry. Now, we hear the word idolatry, and we're like, what does that even mean? I think the attempt from the biblical narrative was, when we think about idolatry, it's things that have taken primary focus in our lives or center stage. And when I get in these circles, and sometimes in Christian circles, we'll throw out the expression that we need to put God first. We need to put God in the center. I'm not sure if we always know what that means, because typically it's followed with a long list of things that we're supposed to do. And if you start from that space of, I have to put God first, that puts all the onus back onto you. Like, somehow I have to do it. I have to put God here. And it feels like a lot of pressure, but what if God is already there, and that so many of the parts of us get masked and mirrored, and we're confused about who we are, and sometimes we forget who we are? But putting God first, I think, is getting to the essence of this whole idea of biblical idolatry, that somehow we disattach from our Creator and we go to created things to give our lives meaning and purpose. I think that's the essence of it. So for the next 4 weeks, that's going to be our journey. And this morning, what I want to do is I simply want to talk to you about attachments. And some of you are familiar with that term in the world of psychology. But when we think about attachments and how we attach to people and how we attach to each other and how we attach to ourselves, that can get to the core of, like, what's operating in the center of my being and my soul? What things am I attaching to? And are the things that I'm attaching to bringing life, giving me a new life, abundant life, helping me to breathe, helping me to open up and become more expansive in my understanding of humanity and reality? Next week, we're going to jump into the idolatry of self-reliance. So that one should be fun, huh? The idolatry of self-reliance. And one of the things that I want to encourage us to do as we move through this journey together is to think about, like, what's underneath and behind the idol itself. So we might refer to it as an idol of the heart. But what's behind it? What's underneath it? And when you think about self-reliance, it really comes down to the air that we breathe in this society is about rugged individualism. We are told by our society, it's all about you, and you have to like pull up your bootstraps and push through and never quit and never give up because you can't be a quitter. You have to move out into the world, showing the world that you are self-reliant. So my question for that part of you that is self-reliant is, what's behind that? What are you attempting to protect? Is it teaching you something? Instead of demonizing it and turning it into, oh, we got to get rid of that thing, what is it there to show you? Is it there to reveal something to you that you've relied on and that you're hiding behind that self-reliance so that you can get to the root of it and begin dealing with what's really going on there? So a good question is always to ask, what is that part protecting? Week 3, we're going to step into the idolatry of certainty. And that one's tricky because our brains are actually wired for certainty. We need to know when I drive across a bridge, I need to know it's going to stay steady. So we want certainty. We want to know what's coming. But when it turns into control or manipulation, or I've got to know these things, and it becomes an over-desire, again, what is that part of me protecting? What's going on underneath and behind it? And then the last week, we're going to talk about the idol of comfort. And when we think about comfort, comfort is a good thing. But when it comes into the thing and it takes center stage of the human heart, and all of my decisions and motivations are around comfort, again, what am I protecting? What am I avoiding? What am I refusing to look at inside of myself? So it's going to be a fun journey, isn't it? It's going to be awful deep. And one of the questions that I want to throw out your direction is, as you're working through this and as we're working through this together, if you feel tension in your body, if you feel something come up inside of you, pay attention to where there's tension. It's really important because your body's trying to tell you something and you feel it and you can ignore it or numb it or get away from it, but there might be something going on that's operating in the center of your being that you need to pay careful attention. So get curious about it, locate it in your body. What's going on there? Where am I feeling this? Why is this feeling in my gut keep emerging? And why am I not listening to this part of me? Now, I spend a great deal of time talking about Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 3 because I think these two storylines are extremely important, especially in terms of how we experience reality and how we experience our humanity. Genesis 1 gives us this beautiful picture of humanity in deep connection with the divine. We're connected, we're whole. Humanity's not driven by the question, who am I, in Genesis chapter 1. They already know who they are. And I think about a baby coming into the world or an infant coming into the world. They're not driven by the question, who am I, quite yet until they become conscious beings. And then they start asking the question, who am I? But when you think about that infant is looking to you, the caregiver or the parent, looking at you, gazing at you, mirroring with you, like, you tell me who I am. So that important role of the parent, and we think of God looking at humanity, this is where I get my identity, this is where I get a sense of my connection and wholeness. So as I look to God as mother and father, this is like that mirroring relationship. You tell me who I am. Give me that deep sense of connection and wholeness. And then we get to Genesis chapter 3, and this is where everything begins to unravel. And I think we can probably trace back to Genesis chapter 3 all of our emotional disorders and our disconnection. Because Genesis chapter 3 really is a story about humanity's desire to act in self-assertion, an act of self-assertion, to disconnect from source. So in a sense, you're looking at the creator and you look away. So you look away from the creator to created things. And then we move out into the world with this deep desire, like how, who, what, who am I? And so humanity begins this journey of self-assertion. And the true crisis of Genesis chapter 3, from what I can see, is that humanity lost themselves. There was a deep loss of self that occurred in Genesis chapter 3, like your authentic self was disrupted. I call it the cosmic disruption in the human story. And as a result of Genesis chapter 3 and that act of self-assertion, we have now begun this journey of like, who am I? Where do I fit? Am I enough? Am I doing enough? All of these questions that come up in the human story. Now, I want you to watch this clip. This is a clip of Jim Carrey, and Jim Carrey, I love this. He dismantles the Golden Globes in 1 minute and 45 seconds. Like, check this out. This is brilliant. Go, Jim.
From the upcoming film True Crimes, please welcome two-time Golden Globe winner, Jim Carrey.
Thank you. I am 2-time Golden Globe winner, Jim Carrey. You know, when I go to sleep at night, I'm not just a guy going to sleep. I'm 2-time Golden Globe winner, Jim Carrey, going to get some well-needed shut-eye. And when I dream, I don't just dream any old dream. No, sir. I dream about being 3-time Golden Globe winning actor Jim Carrey. Because then I would be enough. It would finally be true. And I could stop this terrible search. For what I know ultimately won't fulfill me. But these are important, these awards. I don't want you to think that just because if you blew up our solar system alone, you wouldn't be able to find us or any of human history with the naked eye. But from our perspective, this is huge. One more time, here are the nominees for Best Motion Picture Comedy.
I love how Jim gets right to it, doesn't he? In 1 minute and 45 seconds, it's like he dismantles the whole thing. And I love how much Jim Carrey is actually in his body as he's talking. He's like fully in there. And he's spewing out this deep truth. Everybody's got that nervous laughter thing going on. But he's telling the truth. And there's two driving questions that I think come out of that Genesis 3 narrative and really have driven society crazy. But these two questions are, am I doing enough? And I know that you're driven by that question, am I doing enough? And then the second question is, am I enough? Simply because I exist, not because of anything that I do or accomplish or achieve or conquer or win, am I enough just because I'm here and I'm a human being? Isn't that the message you want your kids to know? Isn't that the message you want to know about yourself? Am I enough, or do I have to continue this endless search of finding some kind of meaning and purpose in life, and we just get on this endless wheel? And I want to reveal something to you, friends. That Genesis 3 loss of self is the deepest loss that the human experienced. And our society is completely built on the reality they do not want you to connect with yourself. They want you to stay disconnected. That's the secret. And when we come into the world, we plug into this machine called society. And this machine perpetuates a narrative. And the other thing that this machine tells us is kind of stay out of your body. Don't connect with who you are. Don't connect with what you're feeling. Even in Christian circles, I've heard about just disvaluing of the human body, even though we refer to ourselves as the body of Christ. And yet there's a sense of like, just stay disconnected from your body. We had a circle group last Monday night, just to give you a little glimpse of what we do in circles. But we talked about our three brains and the essence of what those three brains represent in the body. So we have our brain, your right and your left brain. And then you have your heart brain, which actually has its own nervous system. And then you have your gut brain, all connected. And some of you feel things in your heart. You feel it in your gut. You feel it in your head. You know when it's time, like, oh, something's not right here. I'm feeling it down here. I'm feeling it right here. And we use language to try to describe how we might be feeling in a moment. But imagine if we as human beings were connected to our whole brain, like our whole system. I'll tell you what would happen. We wouldn't be eating the foods that we are eating right now. If we were connected, all three of us, just connected and aligned, we wouldn't be eating the foods that we're eating. And I'll tell you this, we wouldn't be electing the people in the office that we're electing. And you can read that however you want to. But we would not. We've lost ourselves. And society wants us to stay in that perpetual circle of being lost, of like asking the question, who am I and where do I fit and how do I make sense of this reality? Am I enough? Am I doing enough? And it's about winning and conquering and going after the goal. And I think about like my own body, and I think about the reality that 70 to 93% of our communication is nonverbal. Now, for those of us who get up in front, and this is our profession, our career, to throw ourselves out into the world and say, look at me and listen to me. 70 to 93% of what I'm saying to you is actually coming from this container, from my body. I did an experiment these last couple of weeks, and I went back and watched myself on video without any sound. When I first got here, about 2 years ago, I did a sermon, and I could see my little performer coming out. And I was like, oh yeah, I know that. I know that little character, your little performer self, the one that's trying to impress people. And I could see it on my body, and I was like, ooh, that's rough to watch. And then going back and just watching like some of my most recent communications and seeing how my body is coming across. Even now, as I'm talking to you, I can feel like tension coming up in my body. I'm like, ooh, let's make sure we're in here completely. But I encourage you, go watch famous communicators, watch people who talk, watch social media, sure, but do it without the sound on and tell me what you see. What do you see? What's happening inside of the human body? And what you're going to find is that there are so many of us who are inauthentic because we're not quite sure who we are. And we're calling authentic inauthentic because we're so accustomed to seeing people that are so disconnected from themselves. And I'm convinced more and more that if we were connected to this body, to ourselves, to who we are in Christ, connected to the Father, mirroring back to us, this is who I am, this is where I'm drawing my source, idolatry would become less and less of a thing in our life, and God might actually take center stage in the human soul. But we're so disconnected from life, and we keep perpetuating this system because this is what society expects of us. Now, my role here at Ascent is really to help people heal and connect and to find purpose in their life. And very often, people will come to me, and rarely do people come to me when they're crushing it in life. Like, I just wanted to get together with you, John. I'm crushing it in life. I want to tell you about it. I'm like, this should be a great lunch. I hope it's over in 15 minutes. But oftentimes people will come to me because they've had a relational breakdown. Their relationship isn't working. Their marriage isn't working. Or something's gone awry with their partner. Or their physical bodies are breaking down. But there's something going on in their emotional state. So when they come see me, there's something that's not working. And they're like, can you help me? Can you fix me? And I'm like, I'm not interested in fixing you. That's not my purpose. But if I can get you back in there and begin listening to who you are and rediscovering who you are, maybe we can gain some traction and put you back into alignment with who you are in Christ Jesus. And most people that I work with are completely disconnected from their bodies. And one of the questions that I ask people when we're working together is this: what is your body saying no to that you're not saying no to? What is your body saying no to that you're not saying no to? You keep saying yes. You keep pushing through. You keep driving. And your body will always tell you, hey, you got to look at some things going on. Remember, wherever there's tension, pay attention. Get in there. Figure out what's out of alignment. What do I need to work on? And when we're out of alignment, we're kind of stepping into that path of disintegration. And a whole bunch of dis-ease can start to settle into our body and affect us physically, emotionally, spiritually, become obstacles to our own growth. And one of the questions that come up very often for me is like, how do I know if I'm on the path to healing? Well, let me give you a couple of indicators that might be indications that you're on the path to healing. Number one is that your past will begin to loosen its grip over your present. And secondly, you will find yourself becoming less and less triggered, emotionally charged over the smallest things as you step back into this healing process. And these idols, these idolatrous things going on in our lives, I view them as guides, not as demons, not as things we need to cast out and get rid of, but they're there to tell you something. So I would befriend them, get acquainted with them, move towards them with curiosity and compassion, saying, what is it that you're attempting to teach me? All right, self-reliance, what's going on here? All right, certainty. All right, comfort. I'm curious, like, what are you trying to protect inside of my life? What's going on there? What's behind it? What's underneath it? Because very often, if we just focus on the behaviors, we're never going to get to the root cause. And it's not the behavior. These behaviors, these misbehaviors, these things are just indicators that there's some kind of pain going on inside that's hard for us to look at, and we're not quite sure what to do with it. So we numb and we run and we get away from it, and we want to call these things enemies. And it's like, well, maybe they're there to teach you something, or you develop them early in your life called coping mechanisms that became personality traits, and they're there for a very good reason, and they've got you to where you are today, right here. So maybe you should get really curious about these parts of us, these coping mechanisms, these things inside of us that we're like, I got to get rid of that thing. Well, maybe hold on a second. Maybe get curious about it. Now, this got me thinking about attachments. And last Monday night in our circle journey, we worked on some attachments that are necessary for kids to develop healthy attachments with their caregivers or their parents. And I want to share these five. Some of you who have done attachment work know how important these are in our development as human beings. And I want you to listen to this. So these five conditions necessary for raising a child with healthy attachment. And please hear me. This is not about bagging on our parents. I simply want to tell you what is real and ask you to consider, am I missing some of this in my life, and what can I do about it? All right, here's the first one. You ready? The child feels safe, both physically and emotionally. The child feels seen and heard. Does the child, your child, feel seen and heard by you as a caregiver? The child is comforted, reassured, soothed. Do they feel that? The child feels valued. And when I say valued, it's not based on what they do or achieve or accomplish. Let's hold off on giving the awards too quickly. But that child feels valued simply because they exist and they know I am created in the image of God. And then the child feels supported to explore without all this fear and helicoptering that we do as parents sometimes. Always wanting to control, but do they feel freedom to explore, to move out into the world and make friends, and even the possibility of experiencing conflict on the playground? But look at that list and think about your own experience growing up. Did you get all five of these? And my guess is that in a room this size is like, a lot of us didn't get all five of these. We may have gotten one or two, or we got one from one parent, but maybe not the other, or I don't know what your situation was like, but these are necessary for us to grow. And then I got to thinking about this list. This is exactly what Genesis 1 is. Humanity feeling safe and seen and valued, free to explore, ready to encounter. So God as the parent comes in and just gives us everything that we need. And then Genesis 3, they disconnect from that reality. And as a result, they have an absolute crisis of identity. They don't know who they are anymore. And they move out into the world trying to figure out who the heck they are. You're valued not based on anything that you do or anything that you achieve. And this society will not have any of that. They want you to stay disconnected from that reality. That all of your identity is based on what you do, what you achieve, what you conquer, how much you win. And that's our reality in this society. Now, there's a doctor of psychology, a child psychologist in Denver, Dr. Neufeld, talks about irreducible needs. And he takes this list and he expands on it even more. And he talks about the importance of these irreducible needs in our own development. And the first thing that he talks about is that the child needs to be able to rest and relax. If the child has to make the attachment work, that adds a burden onto their life, and they're going to make it about them. And that emotion that they begin to feel like, in order for me to stay connected to my parents, I have to be such and such. I have to do this. And if the child can't rest and relax into the attachment, that's going to add a lot of stress. And this got me thinking about the words of Jesus when he comes and he says, all of you who are weary and burdened, I will give you rest. Like, you talk about the ultimate connection and parenting from Christ. He sees that in humanity. One of the greatest psychologists to ever live. Come to me and I will give you rest. where you lay down your heavy burdens that you feel you need to carry, but the child can't make it happen. That's up to the caregiver to make that happen. And for so many of us, we didn't have that reality. We couldn't rest and relax into the attachment. And if the child senses any of that, if they sense that the caretaker or the caregiver is not giving me the attention that I need or seeing me or valuing me for who I am, simply for who I am, I somehow have to make that attachment. I was talking to my daughter a couple of days ago, and she was telling me about a friend of hers whose dad walked out on her, and she grabbed his leg and begged him to stay. Daddy, don't leave. She's like, I have to stay attached to you. Where are you going? And you think about the burden that that puts on people, that I have to make this attachment work. Compassion. You see why compassion is so important when we start doing the inner work so that we can actually see what's going on inside of the human soul. Second thing that Dr. Neufeld talks about is he says that the child needs to be free to experience and express the full range of their emotions. I watch children in this space lose their minds from time to time, and it is awesome. We give them all this sugar, and then we're like, hey, relax, chill out. You're like, wait a minute, they're like snorting it up their nose. And we're like, just chill out, control yourself, you know, just let the child be. All of these range of emotions. Now imagine, for you in the room, how many of you, without raising your hand or answering the question, how many of you were allowed to express your full range of emotions growing up? Or were you told certain emotions are acceptable, certain emotions are not? Take them and push them down into your body and just keep pushing through. Because we have to stay attached to our caregivers. And in order for us to stay attached, we have to do the work. How can a child not make that about themselves? All that pressure. You think about human beings. Think about yourself for a moment. Stop thinking about your neighbor or so-and-so's not here who needs to hear this. Just think about you for a minute. Your body is designed to have emotions pass through it, right? Anger, like healthy anger. There's actually a brain circuit that we have for healthy anger. Just let it go through the body. But what do, folks, in our society is we push our emotions down, right? Especially anger, whatever it might be, if it's an intense emotion, and we push it down into our stomach, and we call that repressing. And what's another word for repress? To depress. And then what does that turn into? It can turn into depression, anxiety, fear, a need to control, because we're pushing emotions down into the body that's very designed to have it pass through so that you're free to experience the full range of your emotions. Now, for those of us who didn't get that permission or didn't have that in our upbringing, we develop what are called coping mechanisms. And those coping mechanisms turned into personality traits. And now we think that's actually who we are. And we start attaching ourselves to these personality traits. I'm a caretaker. I'm a people pleaser. I'm the good child. I'm compliant. I'm adaptable. I call this pathological niceness. And we see this in the church. There's like so much pathological niceness that's going on. Stop being so nice. Express yourself in what's going on. And we take on these personality traits and we say, this is who I am. I'm the achiever. I'm the conqueror. I'm the winner, the performer, the one who doesn't quit. It's a loss of your authentic self. We don't know who we are apart from these personality traits. Now, you have good personality traits, but very often they get shadowed in these coping mechanisms that turn into personality traits. And then we develop these things called shadows that turn into egos, and they're running the game. And that's why shadow work is so important, so that we can start looking with compassion. What's going on inside of the container? There was a teacher of mine who years ago said this. He said, the greatest gift that you parents can give to your children is your own happiness. And I thought about that, and I thought about that. And that means, parents, we got to do the work. We got to work on our emotional states, because our children are sensitive enough to be downloading our emotional states and making it about themselves, because children are little narcissists. That's just normal. It's totally normal. They think it's about them. And they're always absorbing. They're always taking in. That's why everything we do and say and how we are and how we feel, it affects the child. Even in utero, they've done extensive studies about the effects of a child in utero, that when that baby is in the mother forming and shaping, they're taking on the emotional state of the mother and the father. And all that stress or depression or whatever it is that person is feeling, that child is absorbing, and how else are they not supposed to make it about them? That's why this journey is called the critical journey of getting back to who we are. Getting back to who we are in Jesus Christ, because I think that there is actually a real you that exists in Jesus. And it made me think about the words of Jesus in Matthew chapter 7, where Jesus said, "Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it, but small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it." I think this is about transformation. And transformation is a process of letting go so that you can grow. It's like crabs who go through the molting process. They break out of their shell and they're vulnerable and they're soft because this shell got too tight and restrictive, and they have to move into another shell that's more expansive and open. But that's that transformation process that is absolutely terrifying people. And I want you to hear this. Transformation is not about something new beginning. It's about the old thing falling apart. We think it's change. No, change is just about something new happening. Change is what we're doing here. This church starts here, and then we're going to go over there. That's just a change. Transformation is about the old thing falling apart, where I got my identity, where I thought, this is who I am. Like, that begins to fall apart. And then you're left with the question, then what's left after that? This me that currently exists, that isn't real in the first place. If that goes away, then what's left? Well, what's on the other side of you where you currently stand right now? Is there a real you that exists there? Do you want to stay being Pinocchio? Do you want to be Cinderella? Or do you actually want to become a real human being who fully steps into that transformation process to admit it and to look at it? What's on the other side of you? As we step back into our expression of responding in song, I want to ask you four questions. These are important. If you throw them up on the screen, please, Nathan. In my life's important areas, what am I not saying no to? How does my inability to say no impact my life? Especially for you people pleasers in the room and your pathological niceness. Why do you keep saying yes when your body's like, stop? What is the hidden story behind my inability to say no? And last, where did I learn these stories? Where did I pick it up? Sit with that for a moment. Trust that compassion is in the room because Jesus is in the room. And wherever compassion is present, then we have the freedom to actually look at ourselves and go, okay, I've got some work to do. I got to let go of some things. Because that old you, we're done. Let's step into who you are becoming. Fully present, ready to engage with the world, our pain, all of it. Just let it be. Relax. Be in Christ.